Oh, welcome to the webcomics panel. The Dragon Con tradition. I don't know how many years we've been doing this. A long time. We always enjoy it. A lot of the same faces, some new ones. So why don't we introduce ourselves? Start on the end.
That end.
My end?
You started this.
Okay, I'm Bill Holbrook. I create Kevin and Kel, plus On the Fast Track and Safe Havens.
I'm Mel White. I'm a creator of Duncan and Mallory and a retired webcomic called Coyote.
I'm Obi Breeden. I'm Jenny's other half. I work on The Devil's Panties.
I'm Jenny Breeden. I'm The Devil's Panties.
I'm John Lotshaw. I do Accidental Centaurs, and I work with Guy Gilchrist on Nancy.
I'm Adam, and I'm loving this mic stand, which isn't plugged in. It's mostly for show.
But I feel like a rock star with it. Don't take it away.
Okay.
I'm Adam Withers. I'm one half of Comfort and Adam. My wife Comfort and I make The Uniques and Rainbow in the Dark.
I think this is on now. I get to be the rock star.
Okay. You earned it.
And I'm Laura Innes. I do the webcomic The Dreamer. I also do Winona Earp for IDW, which is not a webcomic, but...
Excuse me. Sorry. No.
Sorry about that.
No,
sorry about
what do you
that.
Mean?
I'm
sorry. Go ahead.
We'll probably ought to start by acknowledging that a lot of us have been working a long time at this business, so... one of my first questions was, how do we keep our creativity going after all these years? It's a challenge to do an episodic work for a long time and keep it interesting to the readers and also to the artists and the creators. So my first question is, how do we keep the creativity going over time? Who wants to start?
So... I actually had a guy come up to my table, and he was telling his friends about my comic, and he points to the first book, and he goes, it's about a 20-something girl who's just graduated from college and is looking for a job. I was like, yeah, that's book one. Book nine is a 30-something woman who's dealing with taxes and housing and mortgage. And so I think definitely it's, when you look at the first Garfield comics, they're completely different. And so everything's going to evolve. And so the comics that you do, that we do now, are definitely different. Ideally, they have evolved and changed from the ones that started out. So how you come up with new stuff is that life is always changing. Or you just go to Dragon Con for a weekend, and you're good for a month and a half of material.
Yeah, I think that my experience has been that there is a cork in my brain, and once I started really getting into writing, creating, getting it out, it uncorked that bottle, and the creativity just started oozing out in a steady stream that sounds much less appealing than it actually is. I apologize for that. Once you get rolling, things start to roll, and you'll hit the occasional dry patch, but the thing that helps is to have a goal. The comics that Comfort and I do are very story-driven, as opposed to like episodic installments, one-offs. And when you've got a plot to work with, if you have an ending in mind, whenever you start running dry, you just ask, well, what is going to move me closer to that ending? How do I need to move these characters? How do I need to push this plot to get where I want to go eventually. But whatever you can do to unpop that cork and just get things flowing.
Now, I ran into this, how do you keep going? When I went back to school and got involved in homework and papers, and as a creator, you're going to run into times when for some stretch of time, life is going to hammer things up, and it may not even be possible for you to do the work. In my case, it lasted 4 years, getting the degree. And so I'm still working on trying to get back into it. In addition, I'm struggling with learning a new way of doing things. When I originally did my work, that was back in the days of paper and ink and stuff like that. Now I have a computer and a brand new tablet. I'm using the Galaxy tablet, so I just draw on it like a sketch pad. But I'm having to relearn how to ink and how to use the tools, watching YouTube videos and going, oh, really? My God, he did what? Trying to learn to color, because coloring for a graphic novel is different than coloring for a web comic, unless you really want to spend a lot of time coloring that web comic with all the little fine details. So in learning both new tools and trying to change time management, I ran into a problem. It's not so much the creativity. I can do the stories, like he says, it's kind of like a cork, you know, pop, and there it goes. But the workflow was where I had the most difficulty, and I'm trying by setting time limits and goals and going toward that. I disappoint myself a lot of times, but if I don't keep going, I won't be able to produce the material.
I basically let my characters be the creative people in my life because they tell me what's going to happen. I always say that I'm just the first person to find out what happens to them. I will have an intention to go into a certain direction and they will tell me, no, we're going over here instead. So I basically let my character-driven strips be driven by the characters, and that keeps things fresh and exciting for me and hopefully for the readers too.
See, that's something that's always weird to me. I'm a plotter. If you've ever been to writing seminars, you know there are pantsers and there are plotters. And the pantsers, they talk to the characters, talk to them.
The voices in my head tell
that's
me to
right.
keep going.
Us plotters, however, we're there with our little whips going, uh-uh, you're not going there. I got a place for you to go, and you're going there, baby.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, I was young, voices in my head. Really, the characters, I've been with them and worked with them for so long that especially when I'm writing, they take over, and the next thing I know, I've written something. Where did that come from? That's much better than what I was planning. And so,
darn cancer.
Yeah, I know, really.
I think for me, I've hit those spots and I've taken breaks. So my webcomic has kind of like halted, or the pace has slowed down and updates, and I've allowed myself to do other projects because I know the kind of person I am. Like, I really get excited about new ideas and things, and so if I only worked on this one thing for like a decade now, I would not have been happy. So I think that by putting my hands in other things like podcasting and other comics that I've drawn, that it's like allowed me to come back to the webcomic with more energy and fresh eyes, and just I guess going through that process with my readers, that as this evolves and as my career grows, that this is going to change and it won't look the way that it looked when I started, but hopefully that's not a bad thing.
Next question concerns social media, which is a excellent way of promoting our work, and I'm just interested in how each of us uses social media differently. Who wants to start?
Again? Go ahead.
Go for it.
The magical wizard genie that is my husband has figured out how to automate a lot of the posts. And so when I post my, I have automatic update on my website. When the comic goes up on thedevilspanties.com, it automatically gets updated on the Devil's Panties Twitter, the Devil's Panties Facebook, the Devil's Panties Tumblr. And then I have my own Jenny Breeden Twitter and Jenny Breeden Facebook, which I'll actually then repost the comic on those because it'll lead them directly back to the website itself, and that's where I actually get my advertising income, is they have to go to the actual thedevilspanties.com. And I recently realized that I'm reading a lot of webcomics on Instagram, which I haven't told my husband yet that I'm now going and resizing some of the panels, because on Instagram you can swipe, and I found that some webcomics will start posting each panel, and so as you read it, you're swiping to the next panel. Because I had somebody say, yeah, I follow you on Instagram, and I forget why, because you post pictures of clouds moving in time-lapse and nothing about webcomics or anything. So I've started posting my webcomic on Instagram. And it really is just, we don't actually spend much to advertise the comic traditionally on banners. We use social media to advertise the comic.
The best advertising turns out to be, it's a social network, right? So if you like something and you have friends, those friends probably are similar to you in some ways. When you share that, you get natural gravity. And you can buy it. It costs a lot of money. you can pay AdWords as much money as you want to kind of go down this road, but natural advertising among friends is the most powerful way to spread anything at this point.
Comfort and I have found that it's important to balance your social media presence between the product, which is your work, and yourselves, your life, which is your real product. You know, you're selling yourself first. People need to be able to connect with you as a person. That's what they want. People want to have a relationship with the creators that they admire, the people who are doing the things that they would like to be doing. To any of us who've been doing this for so long, making comics is, you know, it's a job. This is what we do. It's not particularly exciting. I mean, it's fun. I'd rather do this than anything else in the world. I love what I do. But when people are like, oh, so what you been up to? I'm like, same old. But to other people, this is a fantasy. This is a dream. I am living the life that so many people would love to live, and they want vicariously to be a part of that through me. It's tapping into something that I think of as the reward economy. And the reward economy understands that I can get anything I want for free without working very hard to get it. And so I'm going to sample all the things and try out all the things, and I'm going to test everything around to see what's good. And if you've really entertained me, if you've done something that just really gets to me, I'm going to reward you with my money. You know I don't have to pay you. And I know that I don't have to pay you, but I'm going to, because you've done something that matters to me, and I want you to know that you've done something that matters to me. So social media is the most direct and effective way of tapping into that feeling amongst people and letting them be part of your journey, and they will tell you how much they like you and how much they like what you do by buying your work, hopefully.
I think my mindset has always been like, I just want to play with my fans. I just go online where they are and do the things that they do with them. And so I've never come at it from like a, I'm up here and you're down here, thank you. I've always approached it as like, I'm one of you kind of a thing. And so I get into their goofs and I get in with their ridiculous in jokes and all of the bad punning that goes on in my blog, and I've just kind of followed that around and allowed myself to change frequently. Like, it used to be DeviantArt, and when that dried up, then I moved over into Twitter, and Twitter's really active for me right now. And there was a time when someone told me, like, the Dreamer is everywhere on Tumblr, and I was like, wait, what? And went over there, so then I got into Tumblr. And so I just kind of go where my readers are, and then if they're doing something and having fun, then I'm like, I'll get in on that and make friends, really, I think is my mindset, is to legitimately, I guess, the social networking thing, you know, to legitimately make friends with the people who read my comic and care about them as people and be invested in their lives and, like, hey, you were sick, you were in the hospital, I know who you are, I care about that, like, are you okay? Those kinds of things, that if it's a community, then I need to be a member of that community, and that's been really important to me.
You know, I think that's actually very important, because let's face it, there are millions of creators out there. Think of all the self-published books, the people putting up web comics, artwork, etc. You can only see so many. I can, you know, no matter how fast I read, I can't read every single book that's put out in 1 year or even 1 month. There are just too many of them. So I find myself, I follow Bill's strips regularly. I know Bill, I like Bill, and I'm interested in seeing what he's doing. So that personal connection, establishing that, to me, as a creator and a consumer, that's what it's all about. I've had people come onto Facebook who were basically often writers, who are there mainly to promote their books. And after about the 15th post about their up-and-coming book, I go, you know, I'm just going to quietly unfollow you. We can stay friends, and let me show you when I have something coming around. But there's, I reach a limit. We get advertised to so much, overwhelmingly, in this information fire hose of ads. Like you, I want to see what people are doing. I care if they're in the hospital, if they were hit by Hurricane Harvey, if they got a flat tire. You care. But I don't really care about the 15th iteration of your book and the blurbs about it.
Well, I found out very early that I'm not that interesting. So on social media, I don't have a Twitter account or a Facebook account, but my characters do. Rudy Duclos has a Facebook page. On Twitter, one of the characters who is part of the Great Bird Society is struggling to keep the portal between the our dimension and their dimension in balance. So she reports on that daily and the struggle of that. And Bethany of Fast Track has her own Facebook page and Twitter, in which she makes a snarky comment about each daily strip. And that seems to work, in that I want the readers to have a connection to the characters more than me. So, and thank you for your kind words. But my characters are much more interesting than anything I could do, because I just sit at home in my basement office and draw all day. And if I were to have a personal Twitter feed, that I drew today. I wrote today, and that would be it every day. Except for when I occasionally venture out to Dragon Con. do we want to go to questions from the audience?
We have a,
that was an
oh, sorry.
Oh, okay, never mind.
Sorry.
Well,
so
I lost
Bill's,
track.
Yeah, anyway, sorry. I interrupted Bill before interrupting him. So how many of you want to do a webcomic or get involved in webcomics?
Poor deluded.
Run!
Turn back now.
Run away. Well, run away.
How many, so who here is doing a webcomic?
All right.
Oh, nice. Very nice. Well done. Congratulations.
One of
condolences.
Us. One of us.
Yes.
We accept you.
So, who had the question?
Hands one more time. We'll do Buffy, Gold Mask, small child in a white shirt. Oh golly, front row, blue scarf. Sorry, blue cape. Lady in black and drawing hat. Okay, five.
We spend more time lining them up than answering questions.
That's the strategy.
This isn't so much a question, but a tidbit. Talking about networking or whatever, I've got a couple dozen webcomics I'd read every day. I got them all from each other. I got half of them from your website.
Sorry.
So it's your individual links.
Your
I mean,
fault.
There's a huge connection between web artists that really does it.
That's a good point.
Gold Mask.
How do you know when you're ready to move from idea and practice to actually putting your work out there?
You don't. You just do it.
Never.
Yeah.
Never. You're never,
never.
Ready.
You're never
ever.
Ready.
Don't wait for
you
that.
You never know.
It won't happen. It still hasn't happened. I've been doing this for 16 years. I'm not ready. I still don't know what I'm doing. You have to do it.
We're all making this up as we go along.
And if you wait until it looks right, it's never going to be there. I mean, I've got some stuff out on the... when I was doing Coyote, that really ought to be glorifying a landfill somewhere, you know, kind of toxic glow in the night, EPA cleanup. But the thing is, it was out there. People liked the stories, and they came for the stories. My daughter is starting to do a web comic as well, and I'm just shoving her, do it, dear. Don't fiddle around with it, because she's in the, oh, I want it to look nice stage. There's a ton, from Schlock Mercenary onward, there's a ton of stuff out there that the early material is just rough as you're figuring it out. And improves over time.
Mm-hmm. Art
That's
is
part of the dance.
Art is never finished, only abandoned. So just put it out there and move on to the next one. And then move on to the next one and the next one.
It's the doing it that makes you good at it. And so if you just sit there thinking about doing it, you never actually get to flex those muscles. So just...
Yeah, even
dive
stick
in.
Comics. Think of XKCD. I mean, that's stick figures, people.
Yeah, you've got no excuse.
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody who comes up to our table is like, well, I can't even draw stick figures. I'm like, well, you could be one of the most popular webcomics ever made.
And actually, there was a black and white comic where the characters were dots.
In his likeness.
Yes,
yeah.
And
they were gods.
It was absolutely fabulous. And you'd think, you know, a string of dots on a page with dialogue would be nothing. It was fabulous.
Yeah,
it really was. And he drew those dots so well. Oh my God, the artistry.
Yeah, the hard thing is, you're never, as an artist, as a creator, you are never going to be as good as you want to be. You'll keep getting better.
Because you're always your worst critic.
Well, not only that, but the better you get, the better you'll aspire to be. No matter how good you are, you're like, yeah, but that guy's better. And you might reach that guy, but then you're looking at the next guy. That guy's better than me. Your reach will always exceed your grasp. That doesn't mean you're not grabbing anything. It just means that you will always be aspiring. And that's a good thing. If you ever reach the point where you're not aspiring to something anymore, you're done. You get out, you're done. There's nothing left for you.
And they have a nice service.
That's when you start petering out, you know. And it happens to artists all the time, and it's really sad to watch. But it is good to yearn for something, as long as you're not allowing that yearning to drive you into a hole where you're too scared to come out.
So, do you ever draw inspiration from other comics, web or otherwise?
All the time.
No, I've never stolen from another webcomic. The next question was the gentleman in the front row. Oh, sorry. No, there's definitely a fine line between inspiration and plagiarism, because you definitely have... I've been inspired by... I've had friends who look at my work and they go, oh, you used to read ElfQuest and Strangers in Paradise. And I was like, yes, actually, because it definitely, what you absorb influences what you do. You just have to make sure you make it your own.
I have never, ever looked at ElfQuest or Phil Folio to look at layout techniques. Never, ever in my life.
Pablo Picasso said, good artists copy, great artists steal.
But make it your own.
But make it your own, but still. Yeah. So...
As an artist and illustrator, how do you suggest, like, breaking out or getting that first thing that you've been trying to get at but you just can't reach yet?
Depends on what we mean by that first thing. Like, are you talking your first thing as in actually making your book, or are you talking your first thing as in just getting some little freelance job? Because those are a bit two different type concepts.
You're right, sorry. So just starting out as an artist to be like a freelancer and to eventually build up, but like, how do you suggest just taking that first step to a more professional level?
First of all, just try and do like commissions on Facebook. Keep it real simple. You don't have to go work for Tide and do, you know, their logo. You can just be like, hey, friends, I'm trying to start getting used to doing illustrations. I'm going to do them for $10. And you see who bites. And you know what? That work doesn't pay much, but it gets you used to being a professional, not just doing your stuff, but doing other people's stuff, and that's real important.
Yeah, make sure your local laundromat has the best logo on earth. Start there.
Also, convention art shows. Many art shows are open to having small mounted pictures. Sell some there. Yeah, the first few are terrifying. You go in and, oh my God, nobody has bid on any piece. I'm a failure. I'm going to go home and eat worms, dig in the backyard, hide in the basement. But then you'll get your first sale and you'll start understanding the important thing for us. You have to understand what the audience wants. They want something that you're doing. But what are they applauding? What do they find charming? What do they find interesting? And oftentimes you can get a sense of this in things like individual mm-hmm. print sales. Mm-hmm. Discover a character yeah. is suddenly more popular than you thought.
Well, that's what happened with Dethany in On the Fast Track. I introduced her in 2010, right. thinking I'd get a few goth gags out of her, and the reaction to the audience was I would just get emails just that said, I love her. So that was a signal, do more with her. And now she's pretty much the main character of the strip.
My question would be, let's see how I word this. No, I'm trying to think of like how to word it. What program would you use to like create the pages, and what so what program would you use, and what canvas size? Because I notice a lot of my programs, they look nice, but as soon as I start zooming in, I can see some of the pixels, and I've noticed on webcomics
that might be because your DPI isn't high enough.
But also, what's your final, what are you going to do with it? Is it going to be printed into a comic book? Is it going to be like a graphic novel?
I think we're looking more just for the web for right now. Just like
you cannot go wrong.
Don't think that way. Think for print.
Yeah.
Because eventually you're going to want to have it end up on a piece of paper.
Look at the cheapest sized book, because there are some standard book sizes.
Yeah.
I use CreateSpace and on Amazon, and if you have some of the standard sizes, you can automatically be available in bookstores. If you have a specialty size, which is, strangely enough, a graphic novel size, bookstores can't order you off of Amazon. So I would look at the sizing of standard books and then start conforming your pages, your comic pages, based on that size.
Now, I would also start at scanning your work at 600 DPI, because you can always go less, you can't go higher.
Now, if you're creating on the computer, Manga Studio, and I'm just now drawing a blank on its follow-up.
Flip Studio Pro.
Thank you. And Ibis Paint also on the Android. They come with some standard sizes, and for those of us who have trouble drawing straight lines, they have tools to make the little panels much easier.
The perspective tools in Flip Studio
yes.
Pro are worth the price of admission. Smith Micro is the company that produces Clip Studio. Follow them on Twitter. That program is on sale like every month.
Yeah, it was just recently ridiculously low price.
The entry level version hovers around $30 on average, and you will often get it for less, and it's only missing two features, neither of which you need to use. It's not like Photoshop Elements where they hide everything good but tease you. The base entry-level Clip Studio is likely all you would ever need.
And they do have a nice set of tutorials, and everybody and their monkey does it on YouTube.
Yeah.
Ibis Paint was another one. It's not as intuitive to use, but this is one of those pen phones. And I've done a lot of artwork just sitting around, you know, waiting for various things right here. Full size, and just bring it into, actually I bring it into GIMP, tweak the colors a little bit, tweak the density, good to go.
Another nice thing with Clip Studio is that it allows you to, it has page management tools there, so you can basically build the book as opposed to having to export everything out to, and then bring it into InDesign or Quark. Is that even still around anymore? God, please go away. Die. I still do things in InDesign because that's the workflow that I'm used to. But if you want a one single application, then definitely look at Clip Studio Pro. But anything that is going to give you a high resolution, it's not the tool, it's the artist.
True.
There are some great comics done in Microsoft Paint.
Mm-hmm.
Hard to believe, and in Comic Sans. I had to get a Comic Sans joke in, you know.
Yeah.
But that's a good tool, but it's not the tool. It's the user of the tool.
For me, I'm doing an English language web manga. Or I have 3 chapters in, but at the same time, I'm also doing a light novel as well. And my question is it recommended, like, is it, like, really okay to do, like, 2 projects at once, or just start on 1 project first, then work on it later?
I recommend 3.
4 might be good.
Yeah.
How many does it take before you stop sleeping? Because that's sleep. When you know you've almost gotten enough projects. 1 more after that.
Yeah.
Usually if I get like burnt out or tired of working on one, then I can switch over to the other, and it's using 2 different muscle groups.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so when one gets tired, then you can switch and be fresh for the next one.
Yeah, I think especially with writing, because it moves faster than drawing, that when I do like short stories about my characters that are like apart from the main plot, and then I sell those on Patreon. And so it's always nice whenever I get like I'll draw comics for a while, and then I'll write for a while, and then I'll draw comics, and then it's kind of like I've got auxiliary content to put in another place and generate income, and my own creativity gets broken up. And also it's just, for me, working at home in the same space all the time, I can take my laptop out and write. I write all of my stories at a coffee shop. Just like being in a new space has kind of a different energy, and then I get to come back into the office and draw, and it kind of breaks my workflow up too.
Although I want to say for everybody, if you're new to this, don't do several stories at the same time. Get one done. If you can do that one, you know you can do this. On to the next thing. Fantastic. But if you're going to pull yourself in a million different directions to start and make it likelier that you don't get either one of those done, no. Pick the easier of the two. Do that. Cut your teeth. And then go to the one you love the most. And go from there.
Yeah.
Okay.
There was a gentleman on the front row with the black lanyard. And then after that, there was the woman in the very back with the black hat with the ears on it. Okay, sorry.
How do you find the motivation to draw and work on your comics and things every day, even the days when you're not feeling motivated?
I look at my mortgage.
I don't.
Bank balance.
I don't want comfort to hurt me.
Sometimes
I find the
hardest part.
Get
somebody like you to kick your ass if you don't get that shit done. But you do have to find ways to just motivate yourself. You say, how much am I going to do today? And you set that goal, and you've got to work those muscles to try and get it done. Yeah. You're not going to be fast when you start, and that's fine. But you say, what can I do now? What's my goal? And how do you stay on track? How do you not fall down a tumbler hole?
Yeah.
How do you give yourself 10 minutes in between things to make sure you take that 10 minutes of a break, but you don't take more?
Yeah. Motivation is a muscle, and you have to exercise it to develop the ability. You can't, it's not like a bolt from the blue that inspires you. Sometimes, sure, we get lucky, we get that kind of divine push. Most of the time, you're cracking the whip on yourself, and so you've got to train yourself to be able to do that.
It's important to have a deadline. When you do a webcomic, it doesn't matter if you do it once a week, 3 times a week, 7 days a week, but to have a deadline and stick to it so that your audience knows when the strips are coming, that it's a regular thing. Oh, so-and-so is, it's a Tuesday, it's when so-and-so posts, or it's 1 a.m., this is when so-and-so posts. But as long as it's regular, people get into a routine, and then you have them. You got them. Once you're part of their routine, you just have to always meet that deadline.
Skipping, for me, missing a post wasn't an option. Like, that wasn't even... Early in our relationship, I was like, hey, I've got to go home and post the comic. And he was like, oh, your fans will understand. You can skip it. And I was like, oh, I'm going to miss you. You're cute. And I've, like, There was at one point I came staggering home from a bachelorette party and I realized I hadn't done a comic for the next day, and so I grabbed a envelope and a Sharpie and I drew a comic and I said, I'm drunk. And I posted it, and you could even see the envelope mark. It was an envelope that I had posted with a squiggle on it, and that was my post, and people loved it. God damn it. And so it's amazing, you know, when you feel like you're not motivated and you just like grab something, anything out of the air, and you post that. What's kind of depressing is that sometimes those are your best ideas. Going outside for a walk is amazing.
Yeah.
But just forcing yourself to get started, like once you start on something, it's so much easier to keep working on it. A lot of times it's that like beginning jump. I know for me, I was a commercial illustrator for several years. And so I went from being a college student who worked like, oh, I can just pull an all-nighter and I'll work when I'm inspired and, you know, kind of having freedom of your schedule. But all of a sudden when you're working 9 to 5 and there's a paycheck, then you learn to draw on command. You learn to produce on command. So I would say if that is an issue, are there places that you can find, like, practice that, like, I show up and do it and I don't have to wait for inspiration, whether it's in graphic design or illustration or anything. You know, if there is a paycheck and or if there is a deadline, things tend to get done with those two things. So if you can find a way to bring that in, and I think webcomics is fantastic for that because it has a built-in deadline every week or every so often, it just forces you that you guess you got to do it.
Do you think it's do you think that I should like finish college before starting webcomic, or do you think I should start on it while in college?
Start now.
Yeah, right? I found the absolute best comics because I started my comic third year. I started drawing comics in college of my friends in the dorms and, you know, just being weird and doing D&D. And then that's what started the webcomic because there's definitely ideas that you're going to get from being in the college environment that you're not necessarily going to get working a 9 to 5. And, you know, so write them down now. Do what you can right now.
Okay, I'm going to take a different tack. What's your degree in?
Painting and drawing.
Okay.
Is your comic a like slice of life webcomic, or is it like a epic story comic?
Slice of life.
All right. Yeah. Started in college. Faux show.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a college slice of life. Really very popular.
Yeah. So going back to the borrowing versus blatant plagiarism, how do you guys deal with blatant plagiarism, whether you find it or somebody, one of your fans notifies you that it's happened? Do you go and message the person or try to contact the person and say, hey, that's not cool? Or do you involve, are there lawsuits? How do you guys deal with blatant
lawsuits
plagiarism?
Take money. Yeah. I don't know if you noticed
And whoever you sue has to have money in order to make it work.
Yeah.
Make it work their want. You're wild to sue them,
but
too.
But not more money than you, because then they could counter sue
you. And then they counter sue
you.
Right. Yeah.
I've accidentally stolen from other people. Like people I've never even read before. I had a journal LARP comic, and I was bored at the LARP, and they said, hey, there's a pool of chaos, don't go mess with it. And I disappear for a panel, and the next panel is me with a tentacle arm going, I was bored. Apparently that's a Penny Arcade story arc. I had no idea. And so on one hand, there are some universal concepts. The concept of wearing a lot of undergarments to make sure you look good in a little black dress. I had a lady email me and say, hey, I think your comic is cute and all. Could you get your fans to stop sending me threatening letters? Because she wrote a blog about wearing a lot underneath to wear a little black dress to look good in. And it was the same concept as a comic I did. And so a polite email will go a long way. Instead of just, hey, you stole my shit, or, you know, or somebody saying, oh, you stole from this other person, just saying either, I honestly didn't know that was a thing, or, hey, this looks really similar to my work, hi, is a lot better than coming out swinging. because sometimes it's reasonable.
I think that you need to first understand copyright and parody. You know, when you are infringing and when you aren't, because a lot of things will be similar or look similar. Parody is protected. That's
fair
how
use.
Mad Magazine. So you need to know what you're actually dealing with. In cases of outright plagiarism, if you know where to go and if they are doing it online, and if you know the right channels, you can instead hit up the ISP and knock them offline, because I've done this with a group of people, ASFA, in order to retrieve people's copyrights. When you release something on the web, you need to know what copyrights you're giving away, possibly. You need to know your rights, and then you need to know when it's infringement and when it isn't.
One thing is, you can't copyright an idea. Ideas can't be copyrighted. The specific implementation of an idea, yes. You can't. So you can't copyright the idea behind the chicken cross the road joke, but you can copyright a specific chicken if you put your own distinct spin on it. So that's a very important part. And
trademarks
and that's
or something
going,
else.
And that's going to happen. People, you're going to because there are universal jokes. Mm-hmm. There are things that are going to come up over and over again, and you're just you can't possibly know every possible thing that has ever been written by everybody, and not one of these days you're gonna say something that was very similar to something somebody else said, and it happens. And so if it happens to you and somebody's done and it's pointed out to you, again, a kind letter, a kind word saying, hey, and they, if you're nice about it, they'll probably say, I'm sorry, I didn't even know that you had done this. It was an honest, creation, and that happens. So understand that happens. But if they have gone and taken your artwork and erased your name and put it up and are selling T-shirts with it, that's a different matter.
That's when you get the lawyers out.
And that's when you get a nasty gram from a lawyer will often go a long way, a C&D letter from a lawyer, and then they'll but also and that's like for these T-shirt vendors that you see on Facebook all the time. Like, I get these ones with all of these Snoopy Doctor Who mashup, and I know people at the show's studio. That's not coming from them.
No.
First off, it's a poorly drawn Snoopy, and it's a poorly drawn TARDIS. I know it's not them. So, but a quick, if that happens to you and they're using your artwork for something that you have not authorized, that's where it might be worth.
Isn't it Jeff Jacquez of XKCD? He sends an invoice. He doesn't send it cease and desist. He sends an invoice.
But also, you were mentioning the DCMA has takedown provisions, so that there are avenues that you can go through without having to have a lawyer to say, this is my work, it has been infringed upon by this person, and the ISP has to take it down at least while it is being investigated.
But that's a whole panel into itself.
Yeah, it
rights,
is.
Copyrights,
it is.
And
it is. I mean, it is. It's a very complex area.
Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah.
That was this morning.
So you have to wait till next year.
We're having one tomorrow morning on copyrights and cosplay.
A lot of those things will apply to this.
Okay. So I was wondering. Me and my girlfriend are working on an idea for a comic right now. All right. Yeah, we're working on an idea for the comic right now, and our dynamic with it is mainly it's her idea, and she's the artist too. But she wanted me to help write it, and so when it comes to these kinds of dynamics, like, how do you guys streamline like a writer and artist dynamic sort of?
Well, you'll need an agreement.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Oh. Ours was called marriage.
Oh, We're still working on that contract, aren't we?
Oh, we don't have one.
They're really, no, you read over it, and we wanted to make some stipulations, and you haven't signed it yet, so, which is why I don't use your real name.
Awkward.
I mean, I love you.
We started a thing.
My co-creator died, and the person who was managing the estate assumed that the books were his and that he was the one who had created the characters, Duncan and Mallory, and sold them out from underneath me. Luckily, we're on very good terms. I got it back. That was a surprise to me. You know, oh, by the way, I've sold it. How much of it was yours? Wait a second.
Yeah.
So you need, and I had the letter of agreement. This was an honest misunderstanding. No harm done. It was a sale that I wouldn't have made, so, you know, it was kind of a bonus, but it was a little bit of a shock. So these, you need a letter of agreement. You may not get hit by a bus, you know, for dozens and dozens of years, but we've known too many creator couples that have gotten into arguments and separated, and then the product becomes lost in limbo or actually becomes part of the battleground, and it gets really ugly.
I think process-wise, what Jenny and I do is, I just, when I write comics, which is not too often these days, used to be much more often before, I just write a script. Like, there was this old website called Comic Robot that used to, like, submit scripts to, of web comics, and the format was pretty, you know, pretty decent, so I just use that format. I put it in Evernote, and I have like a pile of scripts that Jenny looks at when I'm not around and draws comments from that.
With our process, in the most general terms, Comfort is extremely good at structure, story structure, and I'm good with polish. She'll do the first draft of every script. I do the second draft. And then she takes it for a third and tells me how dumb I was. And I take it for a fourth, and I say, nuh-uh, Comfort. And we go back and forth until we get something we like, and then we send it to editors because we don't trust ourselves to actually know what a good idea is by that point. And that, I think, is the best advice I can give, is have somebody who can read your scripts, who can be act as an editor, who will tell you that you suck, but not be an ass about it.
So that's the creative side, not the copyright side.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean,
he's the voices in my head tell me when they argue. No. You mentioned a very good point of sending it to someone completely outside of the original creative process. I do have a couple of readers that I, when I have new pages, I send them to them as very rough doodle outlines with my chicken scratch handwriting. So they can look at it, they can say, you know, that dialogue is a little awkward, and one of them is actually a professional editor, and so I'm taking advantage of his services. But it comes back, and that helps me to refine the story, refine character, and just make it overall better. And then, actually, I send it back to him when the page is done, if I have time, and he checks it for typos, because they will crop up. But having somebody who is outside of the creative process, there's a need for an editorial process. I know, Bill, you have an outside editor
that's
in-house.
Yes, that's my wife. She is a she's a published novelist, so she knows what she's talking about.
Yeah, so but and when she goes through and says, well, this joke is not that good or it needs to be, what if, you know, this one's just not that, needs to be worked on some more. Yeah. And, she's a good place. You need somebody to bounce those ideas off that is outside that process, so you're getting a fresh ear, just like your readers are going to be when they see your stuff for the first time, when they see that page for the first time.
Do a little bit of a separation between your relationship and your emotion, your romantic relationship and your business relationship, that we got into a heated argument about a final panel. I was like, well, that's going to suck. I drew it, and then it looked better for his idea. And we took a break. We stopped and went and had a sandwich. And I was able to calm down and realize that he wasn't saying that I suck. He was saying that I needed to change it, or, you know, that you really need to be able, the communication of the difference of they're not attacking you personally or your work. You have to listen to them as an editor or as another artist, and that is something you're going to have to work on personally, of just that separation of business and personal.
Yeah. How are we doing for time?
We got about 4 minutes.
Okay.
I got still
okay.
This is more on the web side of webcomics, but I was curious, what are some website pet peeves or things that you see on a webcomic site that just make you cringe?
Not seeing the strip on the opening page, having to click through to actually see the work.
Yeah, splash pages are, don't do splash pages.
Comic Sans. Anywhere. I know there are a lot of web comics out there that use Comic Sans for the dialogue. Don't use Comic Sans. There are a lot of great comic fonts out there that cost exactly the same amount as Comic Sans, that are infinitely better. It smacks of amateurism. Don't use Comic Sans unless you're making a joke about Comic Sans.
What's the one that I made my own font with, what was the program?
Oh, Jesus, that was like 5 years ago. I don't
know. It was on a plane. I did it on a...
Fonts on a plane?
iPad.
I am tired of these months.
Thank you for that.
Thank you. Right, let's get another.
I know for me, I make a webcomic, and one of the things that I'm most frustrated with is that the amount of time that I have to actually work on it is not what I would like, because I have a full-time job, I've got to make dinner and all that. And so what's your suggestion as far as trying to make that transition into being able to do it more full-time and being able to support yourself with your webcomic?
Learn what you can live without. You don't need as much stuff as you think you do.
You know who moved to Flint, Michigan when they were getting their careers off the ground?
Which, by the way, is everything you've heard.
Right. Everything. Flint. These guys here. So give up stuff before you can go professional.
I'd also say make your comic scalable. Like, don't start out to make like a 10 graphic novel fantasy epic with like tons of gradients and shading and stuff. Do something that is much smaller and much more manageable, and then get started on that. And then, so it's something that you can fit into however much time you have. So like, look at your schedule. When are the pockets of time you have to work in it? And per week, with that amount of time, what can you do? And then create an update schedule based on that. Get started with that project and start to build a fan base with that project. And then, if you start to be able to make money and profit and grow it, then you get to change that and expand it over time.
This is a follow-up to the writer-artist collaboration agreements. Often the writer will create sort of the personality for the characters, but the artist will create the look and feel. Mm-hmm. Have any of you seen any particularly, I guess, well-worded or poorly worded aspects of those agreements? I mean, in case they dissolve, the artist might then be left with characters that have a distinct look that they can't use, for example, or that they just do use them without dialogue. Do you see what I mean? Getting at there?
Yeah.
They're sort of a controlling share. So, like, if you're the writer or whatever, you control the property. It's your thing.
You can establish percentages
right.
in the contract.
And maybe you're doing media rights, like we're sharing media rights with something, but we're not sharing the property.
You can set up in your contract that you own the IP. The copyright is yours. Everything created for the IP is yours. But if anything is done with the IP in media or whatever, then profits from that are split whatever percentage you want between you and the other creators.
The magic word is work for hire. You in this case, you would be actually looking at the other person being work for hire, where you are. When they get paid, they are now surrendering all the future rights. You own it in its entirety because you're basically commissioning them to write or draw or whatever the aspect is. You own the intellectual property and you own the underlying concepts as well as the actual completed work.
Now, Bob and I had a clause in our agreement where we could license from the other at an inexpensive rate. So that when I wanted to do a Duncan and Mallory, I just went to him and said, okay, got enough fan base interested in this. you know, we'll write something 10% or whatever, because he's not, all he's doing is just taking royalties. He's not writing or anything. And sign off on that. It made it very easy. If he wanted to do a novelization of it, he could, again, have offered me a percentage, in essence, buying a license from me. And that worked out well. We never, we were in the process of doing this when he died. So it was never actually into fruition. But that worked out well. And even if people are not speaking to each other, that can still work out well.
This question is actually for Jenny. So I know that you also do another comic, Givas on Parade, and I like that as well. But the question that was asked earlier, or was the statement that was made, was do the comic that you love. I noticed there hasn't been any updates with that one. I didn't know if you had fallen out of love with that one or not. As a fan, I just wanted to know.
I used to say that comic is not dead, it's in a coma. Right now it's in a 5-year coma, and I keep meaning to get
state.
Well, and it was the thing of learn to do what you can live without. The comic the Devil's Panties gets updated every day, no matter what. I mean, no matter what. And so then that actually puts a lot of stuff by the wayside, and I do have a to-do list of I need to post more Keep Us On Parade and a second book of Con Artists and second book of Cats and a second book of all of them. There's the do what you love and do what you can, and there's also do what makes money. I have a friend who has a full-color comic, and she loves that one, but the popular one is the stick figure comic. And so she also does that one. But yeah, there's definitely the things that you want to get back to because you love it, but it's not necessarily your bread and butter. And it is frustrating because the LARP comic has a niche market who are rabid.
They come to panels and ask about it.
They show up at conventions and leave me letters in fruit, and sometimes the fruit ends with watermelon full of vodka. Sometimes there is a certain amount of pressure from readers of, hey, we really liked this one character, we really liked this one thing, and you have to listen to that and get your butt in gear and do it, me. So I have no idea if that answered your question or not.
I think we're set, right?
Well, that concludes Fonts on a Plane.
Where can they find us? Where are we going to be tomorrow?
Yeah.